Voices of Women is a top radio show that gives voice to the personal stories of women. It will inspire women and enlighten men to follow their dreams and create positive changes in their lives. Whether the audience listens to best-selling authors or a layperson like themselves, they'll realize there are others with similar experiences and feelings to their own. This show will give women tools they can use every day, which will empower them to step out of their boxes and create the changes they desire in their life. Chris inspires women to find their voices, speak up, and become leaders of their own life. Everyone has their gifts to share with the world, and it's time for women to work together to bring honor and respect to the feminine voice, which is within all people, men and women. Topics include personal growth, spirituality, creativity, leadership, and divine feminine. Now here's your host, Chris Stainis.
Well, welcome. This is Chris Stainis. I'm the host of Voices of Woman on Transformation Talk Radio. So today I read a blog post about why we hold our truth inside us when speaking to someone we give power to in our lives. So why do we give our power away? And do women do it more often than men? What is the fear that we can't speak up for what we believe in if we disagree with someone? Do we do it just to be liked, to please someone else? Do we cave in and agree, drop the conversation? Do we just go quiet? What do we do? And do you do that with some people and not others, that you're more comfortable speaking up with certain people? So it's good to ask yourself what drives this need to quiet yourself. And do you leave the conversation? Are you frustrated at yourself or angry at the other person? So women particularly need to practice speaking up. The more you do it, the more confidence you'll have in your voice, the more you realize the value of your life experiences and can share that with others. Because you have a unique voice that can contribute to the conversation and perhaps might bring a new perspective to the other person. So I recommend forming a women's circle. Practice speaking up. As you do that in a safe group, you'll find yourself censoring your voice less and less. So that's my message for today. So my guest today is Vicki Noble. And Vicki Noble is a feminist healer, teacher, and scholar, co-creator of The Round, Mother Peace Tarot Cards, and author of 8 books, including Mother Peace, Shakti Woman, and The Double Goddess. Her books have been published in several languages. Vicki got her BA in Women's Studies and spent several years engaged in the women's health movement in her 20s. After a spontaneous yogic and shamanic awakening in the late 1970s, she taught yoga and female shamanism, eventually founding and directing the Mother Peace School for Shamanic Healers in Oakland, California, from 1987 to 1991, and publishing Snake Power, a journal of ancient and contemporary female shamanism. Since the early 1990s, Vicki has traveled and taught internationally, taking women on pilgrimage trips to sacred goddess sites and facilitating workshops on mother peace, female shamanism, and tantric Buddhism. During the last decade, her focus has been on creating and transmitting original Dakini practices adapted from Tibetan Buddhism to her women's studies in the U.S., Europe, and South America, and on participation in the international matriarchal studies movement. She is an associate core faculty professor in a women's spirituality master's program at the Institute for Transpersonal Psychology in Palo Alto, California, and she's also a professional astrologer. She lives in Santa Cruz, California, near her grown children and grandchildren, where she gardens and keeps bees. Her website is www.motherpeace.com. So today, some of what we're going to talk about is remembering the matriarchy. It's a word Vicki used in her books, Mother Peace and Shakti Woman, to discuss the ancient goddess cultures that existed around the world during the time we call prehistory, before history. Anthropologists argued that there were no living matriarchal cultures, and so we couldn't say there ever had been any. However, now an international matriarchal studies movement has shown the world that there are many living matriarchal cultures displaying gender egalitarianism, consensus decision-making, a lack of classism and other hierarchies, and whose sexual and relationship behaviors are a model for all of us, affectionate, egalitarian, psychologically healthy, and free. So welcome, Vicki, to Voices of Women.
Thank you. What a nice introduction.
Yes, and we go back way back because, you know, you were at our very first Woman of Wisdom conference in 1993, our opening night.
Oh, isn't that amazing?
And this year is going to be our 20th. So,
wow.
Yeah. So you're part of our whole history.
Yeah.
So I want to give the audience a sense of what moment in your life that you had a big aha, a change that led you to your present life and your what your mission is in life. And you mentioned having a shamanic awakening in the late 1970s. So I'd love for you to describe that for us. What was that awakening?
Yeah, well, first, your question makes me remember a book that I have a talk published in. There was a conference at Harvard at the Divinity School in 2002 where Anne Browdy, the dean, gathered together 20 women spiritual leaders, I guess you would say, most of them coming out of various organized religions and kind of deconstructing those religions and so on. But anyway, she had 20 of us present for 20 minutes, and the question around which we all organized our presentation was, what were three transformational moments in your life in which feminism played a big part? And it was the most phenomenal conference, and there's a book called Transforming the Faith of the Fathers, Transforming the Faith of Your Fathers, or something like that. I don't have it in front of me, and it's been a while since I thought about that book, but it is available, and it's a fascinating read with 20 of us answering that question. So that's a long way of coming back to the question. For me, the shamanic awakening was the second of my big aha moments, the first one being feminism itself in 1970. And then in 1976, I moved to Berkeley with my partner, Karen Vogel, who made the Mother Peace cards with me. And that's when everything opened on the psychic and yogic and spiritual levels. It was really a series of incidents that sort of came together and created this really amazing period of about 3 years. Karen and I lived there for more than 5 years working on the Mother Peace Project. But for a period of 3 years, I would say it was sort of like a spiritual retreat that the two of us were on, even though we were raising my daughters in a big house in Berkeley. And I had all of these healing crises. I think it all started when I threw away my headache pills that I'd been taking for 10 years that hadn't been doing me any good. And I felt they were ruining my health, and I didn't really know what to do, but I knew to start with a big no. So I threw away my pills and went sort of cold turkey off of Western medicine. And everything began to happen from a kundalini perspective, where I started to have very big spiritual emergence experiences, you know, psychic visions and trembling and big bodily sensations and visionary experiences happening all at the same time. It was pretty profound, and I didn't really have any prior knowledge of those systems, but I soon discovered shamanism and yoga just from prowling around used bookstores in Berkeley. And I began to put everything into a context so that I understood the kind of opening or awakening that was happening for me. And of course, everything sort of poured out of that. My whole career came together around our development of the Mother Peace cards and my teaching that followed from that.
Yes, well, tell us, that leaves me with several questions, but the Mother Peace Tarot deck, that it says 30th anniversary this year.
Yes, so, we're celebrating.
Yeah, so tell us about that. What was the inspiration for the Mother Peace Tarot, and why is it different than the traditional tarot? I know the cards are a circle.
Right.
To begin with, so the shape is different, but...
Yeah, well, you know, Karen and I she's a feminist anthropologist, and I'm a feminist historian, and so we had in mind, actually, to do some research and write a book. And we were we were about a year into our research, I think, when Merlin Stone's wonderful book came out, When God Was a Woman. Remember that book?
Yes.
And it was so groundbreaking. And in a certain way, we felt that she had, you know, she'd been doing her research for 10 years at that point. And so it was like she had written the book we were thinking about. And we just continued to do our research. But at the same time, it wasn't just intellectual or scholarly research. We were engaged in lots of classes in psychic healing and classes in yoga, you know, and a lot of discovery, a lot of opening up on different levels. And one day, someone brought me a deck of tarot cards. I had never seen them before. I'm sure I must have heard of them, but I had never played with the deck or anything. And my friend brought me a weight deck, and I found it fascinating. I really felt that there was goddess tradition in the weight deck, in all the tarot decks eventually that I looked at, and in general in the Western magical tradition. I could see that the goddess tradition had kind of filtered through that Western magical tradition. So at a certain point, again, a series of coincidences and things, and finally I decided I would try to, I would at least see what a tarot deck would look like if I was drawing it. So I drew the first card, which was the Six of Wands, just in an experimental way. And it happened to be a woman in a fiery wheel. So even though I drew the image on a rectangular piece of paper and wasn't thinking about it as a round image, when we showed our friends, one of our artist friends, Cassandra Light, said, oh, it's going to be a round deck, you know. And so it was like, oh, of course. And then Karen made her first card, which was the Chariot, and then we were kind of off and running. You know, we split the deck in half, and we spent the next year making images for the tarot. And we broke the form in just the way that you've mentioned. We made the cards round. We also made lots of images of women, which was unusual at the time. And lots of images in our deck are images of indigenous people and people of color, black and brown people. You know, it was a total departure from any tarot deck up to that point.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Well, I'm going to have to take a pause right now. You're listening to Voices of Women with Chris Stainis, and we'll come right back and talk more with Vicki Noble.
Pray like a woman. TransformationTalkRadio.com. TransformationTalkRadio.com, transforming the world one listener at a time.
Action Whey and Emerald Sea combined give your body the complete nutritional foundation nature intended. Hi, this is Paul Bland. Since I have been drinking Action Whey and Emerald Sea on a daily basis, I've started building the nutritional foundation that nature intended. I am 57, and my blood pressure is 120 over 78. I've lost 20 pounds, I have more energy, and I feel great. For more information on building a foundation of nutrition naturally, visit Sea, that's S-E-A, and Earth.com.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
The In Search of the Miraculous 3-day workshop at the Omega Institute from July 29th to the 31st can change your life. Learn how to identify and erase your unconscious programs. Experience the quick and profound results of the revolutionary self-healing Dalian method. And fast forward your healing journey into consciousness with direct individual guidance from Mata. To register for this life-changing workshop with Eliza Mata Dalian at the Omega Institute, visit the calendar of events at dalianmethod.com.
Bambusa Bamboo Products saves trees and reduces waste by providing a new material for bathroom tissue and baby wipes. Bambusa Bamboo Products offers the only tree-free 100% bamboo bathroom tissue and award-winning baby wipes made from ultra-soft bamboo-derived fibers. Using material from renewable bamboo is the ideal alternative for toilet paper and wet wipes. Call 866-996-2867. Or visit bambusa.com.
Do you dream of being on The Amazing Race? Well, here's your chance. Grab a friend and prepare for an exhilarating race around the city when City Solve Urban Race comes to your city. Teams of two will solve clues and face fun challenges while racing around the city. The winning team gets $300 and a chance to be in the Las Vegas Championship race to compete for a grand prize of $5,000. Not only will you have a ton of fun, you'll also be helping a good cause. A portion of the proceeds will benefit a local charity. To start racing, go to City SolveUrbanRace.com.
Women of wisdom, women of wisdom, women of wisdom.
Well, welcome back. This is Chris Stanis on Voices of Women, and I'm talking to Vicki Noble. So we were just talking about her beautiful Mother Peace tarot deck, and I highly recommend people going out and finding it. Hey, Vicki, where can they get the deck? Is it on your website, or should they just go to Amazon? Or,
well, if you go to our website, you can click on the products page, and it does go to Amazon and I think one other place. But I believe that our website benefits in some way from that connection.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So let's talk about this word that still is a little sticky in our society, feminist, feminism. Do you still, because you call yourself a feminist, do you get reactions to that?
Oh, yeah, mostly from people who think I should market myself in a different way. I think for 25 of the last 30 years, people have been trying to talk me out of using the word feminist. I often think when I'm asked things like that, you know, like, what is it you liked about my work? what would you want me to call myself? You know, should I disguise?
Yeah.
I mean, really, what's the point there? But
right.
It is interesting.
So they want you to market to be more mainstream, so it's more acceptable to people, or?
More acceptable, but you know, what's unacceptable about feminism? I mean, it's not like we're post-patriarchy. It's not like the issues that feminism brought up in the 1970s have been resolved. Women,
yeah,
go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just, because I was interviewing somebody else recently, and it was just about, you know, it's just about women being equal. You know, it's just a call for, you know, there's this negative connotation around feminism because there was that angst and anger, you know, of around women were fighting for their power. So there was that kind of anger you could feel there in the 70s, but it's totally shifted to, and I think partially from the work you do and other people do. Jean Shonda Bolen doesn't shy away from the word feminist. She, you know, I've talked to her about it. It's like, no, we have to reclaim this word. It's just about women having their power and being equal. And what is wrong with that?
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes I think even the whole idea of equal rights can be misconstrued, because we don't actually want exactly what men have. You know, I've never wanted to be equal in that sense.
I think it's, about equal rights. It's about
we want to create a world that has an equal amount of input from women's ways of thinking and feeling and constructing reality.
Right.
That's different than whether we can go into the corporate sector and, earn equal pay, which, in fact, we still can't. But even if we could, that wouldn't be the end of the revolution as far as I'm concerned. I'm very interested in women's, you know, what's been called women's wisdom, women's ways of knowing, those kind of things. I think it all goes back really to matriarchal values and matriarchal structures of earlier cultures. So I really hold on to the word like a dog with a bone.
Yeah, and it's about those honoring those matriarchal those values.
Yes, exactly.
That we want them to be honored and respected, and there's a balance of that in the corporate boardroom, in the governing bodies, whether it's government or corporations or your churches, that there's the equal voice and bringing that balance, because we need that feminine balance. That there's aspects that will move us forward as a culture and in our world if we do embrace the masculine and the feminine and bring it all together. So, what comes to mind is people being afraid of women having power, and even women being afraid of other women having power.
Uh huh. Yes, I think that's true. I've been very interested in women having power in my lifetime. I think we tend to have a different definition for what that power looks like and what that means, what it means to be empowered. And Starhawk is a person who's made a wonderful definition about that. She says power over is the power that has been expressed through patriarchy, and power with is the power that we're talking about in the pagan movement and the goddess movement, and that it's power with that makes the world run in a way that might avoid war and might avoid some of the terrible things that we suffer from under patriarchy.
Yes. And your book, The Double Goddess, I notice the subtitle is Woman Sharing Power. So share some of the history about that, because that goes back to, was it 5,000 years ago or even earlier?
Well, in a certain sense, even earlier, although in that particular book, The Double Goddess, I was very focused on the Bronze Age and even the Iron Age. I got really interested in the idea of Amazons. This is very pertinent to the issue of power, because Amazons, I went to the British Library in London on one of my trips, and I started doing research there, and really, I got very inspired because a lot of the old books describing and recording things about the Amazons, the women that Herodotus wrote about in 500 BC, it made me think that there were Amazons much earlier than that, and that Amazons weren't ever female-only tribes, you know, that burned off a breast and, you know, all those things that we hear in a legendary way, but rather that Amazons were matriarchal tribes, remnants of the more ancient cultures that were structured in a matriarchal way, which just means that structured with women at the center, mothers at the center, and the clan base would be mother to daughter to, you know, grandmother, mother, daughter, that kind of thing. And that that structure of social organization included all of the values that we're talking about. Those ancient cultures we know from archaeology were apparently peaceful and had no class stratification, no central government, things like that, no slavery, no apparent antagonism between men and women. And now we're seeing the same thing in living matriarchal cultures that are still on the planet today. So I got very interested in the Amazons because I read that they ruled in dual queenship and that Amazon tribes had a priestess and a warrior as their queens. And that those two women in those two offices ruled over the domestic isn't quite right, the temporal plane, the physical plane, and the other one, the priestess, ruled over the more religious or spiritual aspects of the culture. And that idea seized my imagination. And so when I wrote my book, I did a lot of original research on communities, civilizations where there were double goddess images from archaeology. And then I put that together with this idea of women sharing power in the Amazons ruling in dual queenship. So it's a very original book. I think it's a little dense and scholarly and, you know, people have to wade through it. But there's a lot of information that it, really comes from the archaeological and historical record. And I think it's a kind of model for us. In our women's spirituality program at ITP in Palo Alto, we actually have co-directors. We insist on having that structure in our department. And, of course, it's unlike any structure anywhere else in the academic system.
Oh, that's great. Like, as Woman Wisdom I created, I don't, you know, it's been years since you've been there, but I like the idea of, I always thought of getting a triad leadership, but I created a council, so the organization Woman Wisdom is run by this council of women, so there's many of us, and we co-direct, and we're creating the wheel as we go. There's not that many formulas out there for us to follow, and so we've been learning, it's so rewarding. We've been doing it for 8 years now.
Well, that's how our program runs as well. And there are three directors, actually, in our program mm-hmm. now. But we also try to co-teach at least all of the core courses. So there are almost always two of us teaching. And it's very interesting. Occasionally, there'll be a disagreement, you know, between two of the teachers, the faculty. And it's so interesting because we have a cohort model, and so the women are together going through the two-year program. And there's some way that even in our disagreements, we are able to make that a kind of a part of the teaching process. We're able to agree to disagree in a very exhilarating way so that it becomes part of the educational process.
Yeah, that's great. It's great. It's a good model for people to witness, for the students there to see that, because they can see there's other ways to be, and we've been doing that too. Well, you're listening to Voices of Woman. This is Chris Stainis. We'll come back, talk more with Vicki Noble.
Is Egypt calling you? Are you dreaming of taking a spiritual pilgrimage to one of the most magical destinations on the planet? Being in Egypt immerses you in the realm of infinite possibilities. The veils are thinner, your connection to your full potential more accessible, and your heart opens more easily. Picture yourself meditating inside the Great Pyramid, exploring the sacred temples in exclusive visits, and cruising down the Nile on a luxurious sailing yacht. If you're interested in travel that transforms and rejuvenates you, join Dr. Friedemann Schaub and Danielle Rama Hoffman, author of The Temples of Light, for a spiritual and healing journey to Egypt this November. Call for more information, 866-903-6463. That's 866-903-6463. Or visit EgyptIsCalling.com. That's EgyptIsCalling.com.
Naturopathic doctor, founder of the Martha's Vineyard Holistic Retreat, and author of the New York Times bestseller 21 Pounds in 21 Days, Dr. Ronnie DeLuce has helped tens of thousands of people, including celebrities and athletes, with her message of lifestyle change. Now Dr. Ronnie DeLuce wants to help you. You too can be saved. Email Dr. Ronnie DeLuce at info@ronniedeluceonradio.com and visit mvholisticretreat.com. Dr. Ronnie DeLuce, your partner in wellness.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at VoicesOfWomenToday.com. That's VoicesOfWomenToday.com.
We are living in a time of great challenges and greater opportunity for transformation. The good news is that public awareness of the need for change is also growing exponentially. More than ever, your transformative message is needed to empower millions across the globe.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pat, host of The Dr. Pat Show, and I'm excited about announcing an unprecedented opportunity for growth as we expand our broadcast by launching Transformation Talk Radio and the Transformation Network. Join me and a team of amazing people and host your own show on Transformation Talk Radio. Get ready to expand your horizons, tap into the best listeners anywhere, and join one of the most positive and expansive networks today.
Historically, there came a time when the boundary of water was transcended as man developed the boat, and the barriers of water became freeways. Join Dr. Pat as she launches this exciting venture. To host a show, call 1-800-930-2819 or email host@transformationtalkradio.com.
Women of wisdom. Women of wisdom.
Well, welcome back. This is Chris Stanis on Voices of Women. I'm talking to Vicki Noble. So, Vicki, can you give your contact information and your website address?
Sure. The website is www.motherpeace.com. My email is VickiNoble1. It's all written out. VickiNobleone at yahoo.com. And then I also have a professional site on Facebook. That's a really long link. You don't want that, do you?
No, but people can probably put your name in and find it, I imagine.
Yes, exactly.
Sometimes you can find search. Okay, well, great. So we've been talking about this, the double goddess and this dual leadership of having co-directors, and it's just very encouraging to hear other people exploring these new models too, and because we're all kind of learning as we're going and doing it, and to have a so I'm curious, because you, there was a word that you, I saw somewhere in your information, archaeomythology. So is that like archaeology and mythology combined? And I'm just wondering, how does this, doing this, this archaeological is the, you know, the ancient, and the mythology, you know, is the, well, no, mythology is, but how do we relate this to now, to our time now and our life, people's, and women's particularly lives now? How can we make use of this information?
Well, that's my whole focus when I teach archaeomythology in our program. Archaeomythology is the word that Maria Gimbutas coined when she was creating really a new discipline, because her archaeological work was so interdisciplinary. She used multiple disciplines, and not only that, I mean, she used, besides archaeology and mythology, she was a folklore expert. She used history and anthropology and ethnography and so many different things in order to put her ideas together. She was very brilliant, had a big mind, and she also spoke many languages and could read in many languages, 18 languages, I believe. So her discipline then that she developed, and there was a whole department at UCLA where she taught called archaeomythology, that discipline is something that some of us have taken up. Joan Marler, most notably, who was her Maria Gimbutas' assistant for a long time. But also I teach that course. It's one of our core courses at ITP, where we have a Women's Spirituality Master's Program. And I love to look at the ancient material. I've always seen it as a model for our contemporary lives because, for example, just the way that they performed agriculture, first horticulture and then agriculture, it was completely sustainable. You know, it was performed in a sacred way collectively by the early goddess cultures, what we call Neolithic cultures, meaning that they were farming cultures, basically. They began to cultivate and they became sedentary and developed civilization by staying in one place and growing their own food, and also doing animal husbandry, you know, domesticating animals. So people often look back on that and assume that those practices must have been the beginning of our ecological problems. But that's not true. That's just somebody's theory. In fact, when they test pollen samples and, you know, do all kinds of different investigations into how ancient people lived, what they see is that during the matriarchal period, during these goddess cultures, which was in old Europe, was from about 8,000 BC till about 4 or 3,000 BCE, during that long period of time, the people practiced sustainable agriculture. They didn't make war. They appear to have lived in egalitarian ways, in all kinds of egalitarian ways across the different disciplines. And so I often reach back to those early cultures and try to pull up that material as a kind of model for the ways that we might think about improving our own society. And now that we've discovered that there are actually living matriarchal cultures, and so many of them have been coming out of the woodwork recently and participating in these conferences under the movement name of Matriarchal Studies, because we have those living voices telling us about their structures and their values and how they organize themselves, it's been amazing. I just think that it really, it's probably, you wouldn't want to say that those cultures were idyllic, but that's never what feminists are saying as we make these discoveries. We're just saying that we could use those matriarchal cultures as our model for beginning to craft some new, more sustainable, more harmonious way of living in relation to nature and in relation to each other.
Well, give us an example of what did they do that was made it sustainable, and what could we do, given, you know, the way the world state is now, how can we use those to be sustainable?
Well, one thing we can look at, you know, I've already used the idea of the farming as a model, but another way that we can look at them is the economic level. And a good way to think about the way these matriarchal cultures function is to think about the gift economy. This is a movement that has come out of Italy, a philosophical movement. But Genevieve Vaughn, who's a feminist philanthropist born in Texas and now living in Italy, she has brought the gift economy idea to a whole new level by equating it with motherliness and talking about the kind of giving that happens in response to needs. So the obvious model for that is a mother of an infant, for example, because the infant is, it can't possibly be a market exchange. The infant is not capable of making an equal exchange. And so this is a model for how to give in a way that makes the giver feel good and that makes the receiver benefit. So I don't know if that's too philosophical, but that's the way that matriarchal cultures are structured. For instance, Native American people have something called the giveaway, right, or the potlatch, you know, where when one clan in the tribe has done very well for any reason during a particular period, they immediately have a great big gala celebration in which they give away all the good that has come to them. It's a very Buddhist way of looking at things, too. We say, may all beings be happy, you know, may everything good that's come to me please be shared with all beings. And so that's the economic model of matriarchally structured societies. I mean, it's so different.
Is
the market?
Yeah, and so based on sharing, it's not based on money or profit.
Right. Right.
But how do you get away from, because there's always some need, seems like there's some need for money, and the gift, can we go to a pure gift economy means everything, it's about giving and receiving. It's kind of that barter, even kind of that barter exchange idea too, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a step, I suppose, in that direction. I obviously we couldn't leap from the one system to the other, but it's pretty interesting at the moment to watch our culture struggling, grappling with the sort of the death of the market. I mean, it's really not going to be possible for us to continue with our old paradigm of growth, growth, growth. You know, that, I don't know whether people still actually think that there's going to be some incredible market recovery, but I absolutely believe that we'll never see that, that that is not what's happening now. I think capitalism has worn itself out. I think that it's so greedy and so cut off from biological life at this point that it is absolutely unsustainable. And there's not going to be any such thing as a market recovery. We have an opportunity in this moment to actually begin creating other forms. And we have more than an opportunity. It's, what is it, the expression, necessity is the mother of invention, right? This
yes.
is a moment when we absolutely need to figure out how to survive in a different way. Because all this talk about corporations, you know, you bail them out and then they're supposed to create jobs. Well, that's a joke. You know, that's
yeah,
not.
We see it's not happening. But I think it leaves us at a loss of, well, what do we do? And that's that state of going to a place of kind of being nothing, be nothing to let a new, leave an empty space for the new to come in, because we have to, in transforming, it means a new ideas, new, totally different ways of operating can come forward.
That's what's happening with this very vibrant new movement, the Matriarchal Studies movement. You know, these conferences have been going on since 2003. There was the first International Congress on Matriarchal Studies was held in Luxembourg in 2003, and there have been several conferences since then. And
I went to one of them in Texas. I was there. And but I'm just warning, But is it moving away from talking? I mean, there's talk about that, but moving to actually creating it is a whole other thing. Well, we've been listening to Vicki Noble. This is Chris Stainis, and we're going to take another break, and we'll be right back.
Lower back pain can be a real pain in the, well, you know. The newly patented Vacupractor relieves that pain simply, inexpensively, and from the privacy of your own home for just $59.95. Listen to what Brad and Dottie have to say about their Vacupractors.
The Vacupractor is amazing. I've had back pain for so long, it's taking time to adjust and not having the pain there.
Each time I've used my Vacupractor, I've gotten instant relief. I would recommend anyone with stiffness and lower back pain give the Vacupractor a try.
Vacupractor is just a one-time cost of $59.95. And you can use it whenever you need in your own home. How does it work? Simple. The Vacupractor uses vacuum pressure. It stretches muscles, restoring proper nerve function and reducing the possibility of disc failure. Finally, a simple, effective treatment for lower back pain that really works.
For more information about the Vacupractor or to order yours, call 800-676-9320 or visit vacupractor.com.
Do you dream of being on The Amazing Race? Well, here's your chance. Grab a friend and prepare for an exhilarating race around the city when City Solve Urban Race comes to your city. Teams of two will solve clues and face fun challenges while racing around the city. The winning team gets $300 and a chance to be in the Las Vegas Championship race to compete for a grand prize of $5,000. Not only will you have a ton of fun, you'll also be helping a good cause. A portion of the proceeds will benefit a local charity. To start racing, go to CitySolveUrbanRace.com.
TransformationTalkRadio.com. TransformationTalkRadio.com. Transforming the world one listener at a time.
Thank you.
Action Whey and Emerald C combined give your body the complete nutritional foundation nature intended. Hi, this is Paul Bland. Since I have been drinking Action Whey and Emerald C on a daily basis, I've started building the nutritional foundation that nature intended. I am 57 and my blood pressure is 120 over 78. I've lost 20 pounds, I have more energy, and I feel great. For more information on building a foundation of nutrition naturally, visit C, that's S-E-A, and earth.com.
Women of wisdom, women of wisdom.
Well, welcome back. This is Chris Danis, and the Woman of Wisdom song you just heard is by Lorraine Bays. It's our theme song at the Woman of Wisdom Conference. So I'm talking to Vicki Noble, and if you're interested in learning more about her, go to her website at motherpeace.com. So we were just talking about the whole economic collapse is happening, all the financial, you know, it brings a lot of fear up for people. So what do you tell, how do we deal with that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's really important, of course it's important to theorize all these models and try to think big and see a big picture, which I work on a lot. But even in my own life, I can get pretty freaked out if I don't stay grounded in the present. And really, really any kind of grounding, I think, is good for us. You know, people do yoga, body work, all that, anything that keeps us really in our bodily senses. For me, in the last 10 years, I've had a really strong feeling that we needed to save what we love, whatever that is. I started reading about the people who are saving seeds. You know, there's a whole movement in our country and globally.
Right.
Seed saving, which is just great, and harvesting and sharing and so on. And for me, I think the beehives I have in my backyard now and the medicinal plants that I grow, the flowers that I grow for the bees and the other pollinating insects and the birds and so on is part, it's my little way of contributing, but also it's deeply spiritual in a very basic way. You know, it's not really like a spiritual practice exactly, because it's not a discipline. It's more like I wander out the door in the morning and I start to wander around my garden, and pretty soon I'm at peace in such a deep way. I think it's quite amazing. I sort of am amazed at myself that I didn't discover the world of gardening and nature sooner in my life, but I didn't, and so here it is. And it's profoundly calming for me.
It is, yeah.
And it tunes me in, you know, to what is beautiful. So I can listen to the news and feel like things are terrible and we're in a lot of trouble and what's going to happen. And then I work with the plants or work with the bees, and I just feel that everything is going to be okay. I feel in some very deep way when I'm in touch with my hands and my body out there in the natural world, I feel there's some fundamental way that biological life will continue and that we will be able to navigate through these very difficult changes that I think are happening to us, changes in the weather, you know, and in the global biosphere and things like that, big things that we can't individually really affect on our own, but that we can tune into and flow with and adapt to like a good, strong species. It's adaptation that allows us to continue to evolve, you know.
Yeah, so I like, you know, it's paying attention to even the small things. Like I've noticed, I'm out gardening, and I've particularly been noticing the bees. There'll be and it's such a gentle nature by them. They're just going from blossom to blossom, doing their thing.
Yeah, they're very busy, but very calm.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned that, because I've been noticing that this week when I've been out there watering and
yeah.
just noticing the bees and the bumblebees, the different kinds of bees, and knowing the plight of them. There is what are they getting, viruses or some sort of
Yes, colony coating.
Wow. Yeah, all sorts of things. So I've been paying attention to that. I don't know about putting hives in my back, is a place in my backyard, but I have been noticing.
Yeah, I really encourage it. I've been wanting to be a beekeeper for 20 years. I've even taken workshops over the years, but finally I am. And it's really profoundly satisfying. And I do feel like it's my little way of helping to save the world, you know, saving the bees is a good thing. But, you know, more than that, Chris, because the bee, it links right back to the matriarchal stuff because the hive, of course, is almost entire. It's like an Amazon group or something. It's like 90% female, and it's got a queen and all that. But beyond that, the word in the ancient times, the Greek word for bee, Melissa, is also the word for priestess. And the bee priestesses is a subject that has become interesting to a lot of women in women's spirituality. I think of Lane Redman, for example, the wonderful drummer. She's doing a lot of music now and a lot of investigation of the ancient bee priestesses. Marguerite Rigoglioso has written a couple of books about the ancient priestesses in Greece and their shamanic practices, and she links them to the bees. So it's a really deep and connective kind of subject.
Well, that's interesting. I wasn't aware of that, of the bee priestess. And I know the hive thing and the matriarchal, and there's, you know, the queen bee and all that. But to it's so interesting to take these subjects or these things that we know, you know, we know there's a queen bee, but to translate that then into how it relates to the matriarchy. Or and how it relates to us as people, you know, what we can learn from that, because they all work together to protect the queen and to because the queen, what, that's the queen is the one that makes the eggs for the survival of the colony.
1,500 eggs a day.
Yeah, so there's that protection. I mean, there's that sustainability model. You know,
that's right. Exactly.
Protect the queen because she makes the eggs, and you know, and it's almost like protect the female because we're the ones who, you know, give birth. Protect
the goddess in a way.
Protect the goddess, which is, you know, a lot of people translate the goddess as the earth. You know, that protect our. So it's all related. It's interesting how it can all come together, and then how does that to relate to us personally? I mean, that's our personal work of. I think it's narrowing it down to, like you say, you are focusing on this beekeeping. Now somebody else, it might be, saving the seeds, like you said, the all the different varieties of seeds that have been lost, and planting those seeds in your garden, you know, the heirloom, tomatoes or the,
it's so important.
Yeah, important to focus on what it is that you feel passionate about and study that, work with that, and find the sustainability model in that. What's there for you to learn about? I mean, those are just, so thank you for just bringing that to our attention you know, it's really about taking it to the personal rather than these big world views or these big world problems. Bring it down to the personal of what can I do as one person. So thank you so much for being here today, Vicki.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It was a much too short conversation.
Oh, I know. I didn't even reach half of what I wanted to talk to you about, so maybe another day we'll talk again. So I want to leave everyone with this thought today, to claim your power by knowing and expressing your gifts and honor the gifts in the woman around you. Support each other in your transformation towards powerful women ready to change the world. This is Chris Danis. I'm glad to have shared this hour with you on Voices of Women. You can contact me at Woman of Wisdom. The email is wow@womanofwisdom.org. I'm the founder of Woman of Wisdom Foundation and a conference that's been going on. We're on to our 20th year this coming February 16th to the 20th. And I'm also the author of the Amazon bestseller and award-winning book, Women of Wisdom, Empowering the Dreams and Spirit of Women. And it's all about what Woman of Wisdom is about, sharing our gifts. And many of the women that have come to the conference, there's just There's wise words by them and stories and art and poetry is in the book. You can purchase it at our website, womanofwisdom.org. You can also sign up for our newsletter, our monthly newsletter. And if you're in the Seattle region or Pacific Northwest, join us for our events. We have monthly dinners, monthly ecstatic women's dances, and there's still a little window of opportunity that you can apply to present a workshop at our conference in 2012. We've given a little bit of extension if you can get me a workshop proposal by next week at the very latest. Go to our website and look for the 20th annual conference on the link for that. It'll take you to the page that has the forms and information of how to apply. So thank you for tuning in to Voices of Women and have a great weekend.
You've been listening to Voices of Women with Chris Stainis. Tune in each Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time for Voices of Women Today. Radio with Chris Stainis.